going to smash the world record.
Great goal for ASMR! New world record time!
Brilliant! It's goal! Kelly's won the goal for Great Britain!
Simone's got enough gold medals at home. Someone give this girl a crown.
Hello and welcome to Off the Bench Podcast. I'm Molly McElwee, a journalist and writer.
And I'm Lauren Rouse, two-time Paralympic rowing champion.
Each week, we'll be inviting extraordinary women athletes, coaches, and leaders in sport onto the show. They'll be sharing moments they felt sidelined during their careers and how they found ways to smash through barriers and succeed regardless.
From difficult injuries to living life online as an athlete to finding their way in a male-dominated industry, these incredible women will be sharing what they've learned along the way.
Today, we had the absolute pleasure to welcome England cricket legend, Catherine Cibber Brunt.
Bowser! Catherine Brunt through the gate.
Brilliant delivery from Catherine Brunt. She's fired up, so she should be.
During a 19-year international career, she logged 267 games, 335 wickets, 1,864 runs, 4 Ashes victories and 3 World Cups. She is quite simply one of the best to have ever worn the England shirt. And she was pretty fun to chat with too. What a powerful conversation, eh, Lauren?
What a woman, what a career. I really just thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. I mean, for the listeners, prepare yourselves. It's an emotional one. I just resonated so much with her story, being an LGBTQ role model within the sport, and also as well, just her struggles with mental health. I think there was so much that I just related to personally, and I came away from the conversation completely inspired, to be honest.
Agreed. I think we were both holding back the tears. So we really hope you enjoy this episode of Off the Bench with Catherine Cibber Brunt.
Welcome, Catherine, to Off the Bench podcast. We are so pumped to have you on this episode. And I firstly know you're probably very busy enjoying retired life and enjoying everything that comes with that. How are you doing anyway?
Well, I'm actually not really feeling retired at the minute because I'm having to hang on for the 100, which is in August. So I'm in a bit of a funny place at the minute where I want to just relax and chill out, pretty much do nothing, hide away and sort of like just be myself for a year. But it's turning into like loads of opportunities being thrown at me, like lots of media. I'm going to be working on the Ashes with BBC and Sky and yeah, and then obviously the 100. So I'm actually probably busier than I was before. So it's going well, but not in the way that I anticipated.
Yeah, anticipated a nice restful period, being able to maybe go on a nice holiday. Everybody I know in sport, athletes that say that, they're like, yeah, coming to retirement, planning like a really nice break, not having to be involved in the sport at all. And then actually you just get appearance after appearance or then, yeah, like opportunities to go and do things. So, and then you're like, I can't turn this down. I'm going to have to do it now.
Yeah, I've also got a house build going on at the minute, which is carnage. So I'm trying to manage that as well. Not good.
That is a lot of juggling. My gosh.
Yeah.
The news of your retirement from international cricket came, was it a few weeks ago now? I mean, how have you kind of settled into that? Because you had a 19-year career. Like, it's a long time to, decide to step away. When you look back on it, how do you feel now, I guess, with the benefit of a few weeks?
I'm finding it quite strange, actually. It's a bit of an adjustment. At first, like I felt when I made the decision, I felt really relieved and positive about my decision. I'm not saying I feel the opposite to that now. I definitely made the right decision, but it's more that I'm adjusting my life now to life without cricket, which isn't really happening because I've obviously took on a lot of cricket work. But it's just finding my way around day to day, not being around lots of people, not being told what to do, where to go, what to wear. And, you know, like, I don't like being bored. So having stuff to do, like, I couldn't just retire and do nothing. Like, I've always got to be doing something, finding things to entertain me. So it's been really difficult. And I think the major part is not having that around. We've lived in each other's pockets for the last 12 years, touring and when we're not touring, being at home and or just hanging out. So being with someone every minute of the day and then suddenly not seeing them is pretty strange to me, which obviously I've got to adjust to now. But it's not the best thing, but I'm working it out, and I'm sure I'll find a good balance at some point.
Yeah, it surely will take time. Like, it's like I say, like nearly two decades of work and kind of routine and all that kind of thing. When you look back to the girl that started playing cricket growing up in Barnsley, do you think she ever would have thought of you playing for England and doing everything you have in the sport?
Oh, no, absolutely not. Yeah, my upbringing and my early years, especially early teen years, like, were drastically different. Like, extremely shy, I was bullied a lot, not really knowing who I was and what I liked or what would make me happy. The only thing I knew was that I was a bit of a tomboy and I really liked sports, and I found that I was quite good at most sports, mainly because I'm one of six, and the one up from me, I'm the youngest. My brother Daniel, he was really good at all sports, and naturally I just wanted to be better than him at everything. So yeah, that's where that came from. And yeah, finding my way through that and then accidentally coming onto cricket at an elite level. I always just played it because it was something that I was good at. So I did that because I was good at it and I enjoyed it. So that made me feel special, because there weren't many things, unfortunately, that made me feel that way. So I kind of, even though it was really, it gave me a lot of anxiety, because being around boys and putting yourself on show is terrifying as an introvert, but equally, I was good at it and I enjoyed it. So I was like really torn as to whether to keep doing it or not. And so there was always something that kept me there. And so clinging on to that and finding my way through that, then that opportunity arose to play for England. And it was just a complete accident. And I didn't want to do it because I thought, I can handle this at this level, but any more than this would be a bit much. So no, I would have never done it had people not pretty much pushed me. My sister pushed me there, my brother pushed me there, my parents. Yeah, I could never have ever have seen this coming, and it wasn't something I wanted or wanted to push myself towards. So
I think people who've watched you play cricket would be maybe surprised about imagining you as kind of an introverted kind of teenager, because you're such a huge personality on the pitch. Does that come from then?
I think she was always there. She just got beaten down so much. Like, I was quite big, I'm not sure if you can say fat, that's the only word I've got in my head, as a teenager. And so and I was bullied for that a lot, and that sort of stamps down your confidence, doesn't it? And makes you very internal. And so when I arrived there, I was this person who was just hidden away and like that. But underneath, I was, you know, I'm quite a bubbly mental joker. And so there was always somebody passionate underneath ready to come out. And I guess cricket and the highs that come with that and the people that you meet brought that out of me. And it took a few years, to be fair, from debut, because for my debut the team was made up of older established people, so they were obviously quite intimidating. So when I became the older player, that's when I came out of my shell and started annoying everyone. So
yeah, I mean, you've seen the game go from completely amateur to what it is now. I mean, when you look back on your debut, the first World Cup you played in, I mean, 2004, 2005, it must feel a world away in terms of the support you guys get now and also just the attention on it as well. What are your kind of memories of those first few years of playing for England?
So obviously at the very beginning, we weren't paid by the ECB. We had Sport England lottery funding. That was how we financed ourselves to be able to drive to Loughborough to train, or to be able to get to county championships and take part in those tournaments. But it was such a minuscule amount, and there were things you still had to pay for. Like, I still had to pay for half of my own equipment and stuff like that. So an away trip felt like an absolute luxury, and that only happened really once a year. Whereas now, you know, you could go abroad up to six times, depending on things that you take part in. So it is a completely different world. Some of my best memories are from when I had nothing, and it wasn't broadcast or cared about. Because it does. It, when the cameras are there, they add so much. Like, you get all the negative comments on social media. You get all the expectation, anxiety that comes with performing on TV or in front of thousands of people. And we didn't have any of that then. You were just playing for the love of it, you know, the pride and the fun and being with your mates. So it's both a blessing and a curse now.
I read somewhere that was it in 2005 in Delhi that you had monkeys that were in your hotel rooms. Is that right?
So not physically in there, because that would have been really dodge. But yeah, they were like rattling on the windows. The windows were all like barred up. And we wondered why. Felt like we were in a bit of a dodgy hotel. And then that happened and I was like, oh, that would be why then. Because obviously they would have got in otherwise. But yeah, that was an interesting tour. I think that was my first trip to India and it was a bit of an eye-opener. But it was a great experience. At the time, I was moaning constantly, like, we were all ill, we were getting bitten, things just kept going wrong, like throwing your kit on top of a bus and hoping it stays on there while you travel. Like, being, like, hot, like, surrounded by people wanting to touch you, you know, because you're different to them. And, like, it was just mad, absolutely mad. And not being able to eat anything, because everything made you ill. Oh, but it was like, they're my best stories.
And I think, like, looking back as well, do you think yourself, like, what I guess, like, stories of what I hear as well from sort of within rowing, within my own sport, about what in the early days people would put up with and what we would do, and you think that's the world of an elite sport and high performance sport, and none of it shouts or screams high performance, you know. No. You're talking about there putting your kit on top of a truck or something and hoping that it stays there by the time that you get there, especially when you're paying for it as well in those early stages. Do you think it's wild now? Do you think maybe some of the younger girls that now are in the team would be horrified by some of those stories?
Oh yeah, no, they wouldn't do it. They just wouldn't come on tour. Everyone's a privileged queen now. Yeah, we're just like, what we expect now is different. Like, this, the standard is so high that anything below that is unacceptable, which is mental. Like, I just come from a place of hard graft, and I like that. Like, my dad ran to work and back every day, so he totaled like 100 kilometers running every day. He worked down a mine from 7 till 7, so he never saw the daylight. Like, he used to go around turning lights off after me because, you know, he's got 6 kids to support. Like, I'm just from a place where you put like a breath wrong, you get a smack for it. Like, and that's just me. Like, strict upbringing, a hard grafter, work for everything you got. I never given anything, and I like that. It made me who I am, and I just wonder if these days we are not saying you should smack your children. we don't have that. I call it a bit of bastard that we need to be able to survive in this world by yourself and realize that, you know, you, if you can go through this, you can go through that. So it's tough. It's a scary thought.
Do you think that level of, like, I guess your upbringing and I guess the struggle of growing up, you know, in an environment like that where, and, you know, I know from watching my mum work really hard and not make a lot of money at all, and we never had a lot. So I sort of adopted this mentality and this level of resilience about me that I think has helped me in my career and has helped me be able to work hard and understand that hard work was what made me successful, but also this level of resilience and going, if things aren't going your way, you kind of just have to stick at it. And that's just, sometimes there is no other choice but trying to keep going at it. Do you think that's what's led to having such a successful and long career, that level of resilience that you have?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, resilience is the number one ingredient for me. The willpower that I've had throughout my whole career is why I've lasted 20 years. I don't know how many cricketers have had that long a career, especially as a fast bowler. It's generally a short lifespan. Is the key ingredient for me. And I've had that bred into me throughout my whole upbringing. Major injuries do that for you. Being a lesbian does that for you. You know, there's just on that, like that, every day there's something, you know, to ignore or to, I don't know, push through, if you like. these are lessons I wish I could teach, but you seriously have to go through them to get through the other side and realise what you're made of, I guess.
I mean, Alice Campsie, I think, was born like a few weeks or a few days before you made your debut, which is remarkable that you were playing with her. But what do you think you did add to the environment where you could, the wealth of experience that you had, how did you kind of hand that down, I guess, to the new players coming into the England environment?
Well, I guess some of these girls, so like Lauren Winfield is one of my best mates. She's only 31, but she was a flag bearer for my debut, a little kid waving a flag and me running through it. And she grew up watching me play, and she's from the same county as myself. And I'd say she's one of the most resilient people I know as well. And these girls who have come into the team now and been a part of it with me have watched me play as they've been growing up. So hopefully, you know, that helped them somehow, because that you always have to refer to something, don't you, to check yourself against it. Like, I don't know, the inspiring women I would have watched as I was growing up and taken lessons from, had they not done something, I wouldn't have realised, well, maybe I can too, for instance. And I guess from talking to Alice, that's something that she's taken from me too.
I can't imagine kind of coming into a team environment with the person that you've looked up to all of your life. It must be, pretty insane for them. And I know you've got kind of your gregarious side. I'm sure you've got that. You bring a lot of fun to the team environment too. But that must also be kind of intimidating for them to kind of go in and be like, oh my god, this is Catherine. Like, Brunt, like, what?
Yeah, we've had like these sessions before where we've come together and we've spoke about stuff like that. Like, so we've talked about like giving feedback and stuff like that, and one of them was like, that was quite intimidating, and I'm like, what? And I'm definitely intimidating on a pitch, I'll give them that, but not off. And I guess that's where it's always worked out, because I have a different version of me on and off the pitch. And so with that feedback, I would just be like, please don't be intimidated by me like off the pitch. If you ever want to speak to me, ask me a question, learn anything, or even just, you know, use me, feel free. Like, don't be afraid. Like, this is what I'm here for. And so once I guess that ice was broken, then it's, you know, all the natural learnings and integration happens, because obviously naturally a near 40-year-old's not going to hang out with a 17-year-old normally. So yeah, these things have to happen, you know, in meetings and on the training ground. And it did. And I'm glad for it. And in the end, I did start. I wanted them to come to me, but I decided in the end I was just going to make the move, because time is precious. But yeah, it worked. It worked out well. And I'd like to think I'd passed a few things on.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
And you've been such an incredible role model, not only in that teammate sense, Catherine, but you've also been an incredible role model for the LGBT community in your presence as a lesbian. And I think, you know, speaks so powerfully to a very small community of us that exists within sport. But, you know, you've spoken before about struggling to tell your parents that you were gay, and how do you look back on that moment of coming out? And I guess, how did you look at that now where you are today and having a wife and being able to live out publicly?
yeah, that was, I don't, it's still not something I feel comfortable talking about. I definitely have to make myself vulnerable. I think it comes across that I do it quite easily, for sure, but it's not. I'm always having to sort of hold stuff in, because it is like the being gay links to my mum so heavily, and she's the one person that can just trigger me off in a second. Shit, and it's happening now. So like in the beginning, like, my mum's a devout Christian, and so being gay in any form is like just the, you know, be all and end all with her. And so when I came out at 21 to her officially, I actually wrote her a letter because I couldn't do it to her face. It was just too hard. And that was like the day everything changed. My relationship with my mom just sort of like faded out to nothing. I left home, tried to like find my way without that negativity and all that there, which helped. It was difficult, but it helped. And I did that through my coach at the time, my cricket coach, our head coach, like, told me it would be okay. As a parent, he would want me to, if I was his daughter, to make that move, to let them know, and it would be okay. And it kind of had the opposite effect, so that bothered me for quite a while. And it always will, because my mum will never, she's so stuck in her way of thinking that will never change. Like, she's nearly 80 now, and I don't expect her to change. She still loves me. She doesn't accept that side of me, but I've decided that's okay. Yeah, it is hard, and it always will be. Like, and I'll always carry a lot of shame because of the way she feels about it with me. So, like, hiding, I won't hold Nat's hand in public, for instance, because I feel like, you know, I'm being stared at or judged. And that just all comes from the fact that we're made to believe it's wrong and gross, and I'm finding strange words to use here, but that's just it. And hopefully, you know, it's gotten better for sure. Like, I'm able to actually speak about it, tell the world that I love someone and that I'm married to them. Nat doesn't have all this, so it's really great to have her positivity linked to it. So her parents are fantastic and totally accepting. Yeah, like the hardest, one of the hardest / best days of my life was being married. My parents weren't there. My brother walked me down the aisle, and Nat's were there, and they loved it, and they felt all the love from that day. And yeah, that was a shame, but didn't take away how great it was, thank God. Yeah, so that's, I guess, my sort of upbringing into the world as a lesbian. And as we all know, everybody, we've all got a story.
Mm. That's really powerful to hear you talk about like that. I mean, it makes me feel emotional. Just, I guess, that fear of rejection is that fear of, for most young queer people, that element of going, I'm going to lose the people I love around me because of the way society has taught them to hate me and who I am. And I think for me, it just relates so much to that, of that fear of being like, but I have to be who I am, and I have either found my person, or I know I am this person and I have to be that, because fundamentally it starts to affect you. And I don't know how you felt, I guess, in your sort of teenage years, but it started to affect my mental health. It started to affect my performance in sport, and I just couldn't continue to live like that. And after I came out, I mean, it's made the biggest difference in my life, but it's also meant that I can find my person. You know, I'm engaged now to my fiancé Jude, and it's just been the most beautiful thing. And I think that, you know, I never had those sort of role models growing up, those LGBT role models in sport. I just didn't see that. And I think it's so powerful in the presence of you even saying, like, I don't care if I get kind of rejected, and even from my own family, but I'm going to be out and live my life and just be happy and find your person. Mm. And the impact in just your presence, you and Nat together, you spoke about a little bit earlier, and we'll go on to that in next, but just the presence that you have in the sport is just powerful. And I think sometimes we don't realize that as athletes, because we're just living our lives and as people, but the impact is greater than you can ever think, of just your presence of being there. So firstly, thank you from a younger queer person on that. But you speak about Nat so beautifully in your wedding day, and it's making me very excited for planning my wedding. But you speak about that, and I guess there's got to be an element of difficulty there with you both being teammates. I can't imagine. I mean, my fiance Judy just plays basketball and we're both athletes, and that comes with its extreme challenges of us both being away and our programs clashing. But is there another element of that difficulty, or is it easier even with you both being on the same team as well?
No, what's hard now is her being away. We both have loved being together every second of the day, and I think that's how I knew I was supposed to be with her for the rest of my life, is because I can't be around her and ever be angry or upset or annoyed. Like, she just makes me whole, you know? Shit. I'm getting emotional again.
This podcast is getting really emotional tonight.
I know. Like holding it back.
Yeah, she's just like, everybody needs to find their Natalie. Like, you've found yours, and just make everything easier. Like, my whole life's been quite difficult and I guess sad, and like cricket is how I find my happiness. Shit.
And take a moment if you need to. Like,
yeah, no, sorry.
Don't worry.
And she just sort of makes all that go away. So now I don't have cricket, the one thing that made me happy. I have her, which is, you know, brilliant. And everybody needs to find that and allow themselves to have it, which I didn't for a long time. So. Yeah, it's brilliant. These are happy tears. If you can.
I mean, it's so beautiful to hear you talk about Nat and your relationship and finding each other through cricket. And I mean, I read about, I think this is right, but the story about how you asked Nat out must be one of the best of those stories I've ever heard, where you asked her.
No, well,
you
awful.
Can tell the story.
It's
come
cringe.
On, you can tell the story. It's not cringe. I think it's incredible.
It's cringe. It was more of a joke at the time. Like, if you can imagine, athletes on tour, we get bored and we do daft things. And that was like one of the first Love Island years. I mean, I'm not a Love Island fan. I find it utterly ridiculous. But the girls were watching it, and it was like a, you know, a conversation starter. So the ones of us that were like, no way am I watching that crap, we ended up watching it. And then you get sucked in, don't you? And there's something one of them did on there. Are they all like spelled out, I love you?
on the balcony, the no? Yeah, I remember that.
So I said the day before to one of my mates, and my best mate actually, if we win the World Cup tomorrow, I'm going to ask Nat out officially, just like as a passing comment. And then, but I definitely meant it deep down, just being a wet bag about it. I just kept holding back, not doing it. And then, hey presto, we win the bloody World Cup. And then it was such a massive occasion, like it blew everyone away, like got everyone. And then my best mate came up to me, she's like, do you remember what you said? I was like, oh no. So she like assembled everyone. And at Lourdes, it's the pavilion's obviously really famous, and the balconies are really famous. And I took Nat out onto the balcony, and there they were all on the floor, all like spread out in this I love you word. And I was just like, this is horrific. But she found it great. So we have got a picture somewhere, actually.
So, the Lord's
classic
Pavilion.
Gay fashion, it's extravagant and over the top, and everything yeah. I love about this community.
Oh, it's truly awful but funny as hell at the time. She loved it, and I'm sure she'll never forget that. So yeah.
Collectively, the best day ever, I guess, winning the World Cup at Lourdes on that incredible day. And then
and well done me, like, because how can I forget that date? Yeah, like, I'm not going to forget about getting a card or anything, am I? 23rd of July, what a day.
Love that, love that.
Faced, I guess, challenges of being gay and in your experience of that, not only from your own personal stuff, but is there any challenges that you and Nat have faced along the way within sport just from being gay as well?
No, so we're really lucky in the fact that our teammates have always been brilliant. Our coaches have been brilliant. Obviously, relationships in a team from a business perspective aren't great. Like, if you fall out, then your performance can lack, or somebody ends up getting pushed out if one's better than the other at what they do. So luckily, we're both always been very mature, never, ever fallen out. And we only ever inspire each other to be better because we both effectively do the same job. We're both all-rounders and always wanted to be better than each other. So naturally, it brings the best out of us. So from a business perspective, it actually was good for them. But luckily, the surroundings for us were great. All our teammates are just really accepting. We have a lovely, like, family supportive environment, which is what you can just always hope for, which is not always the case, obviously. And the coaches and the ECB and the company itself have always been great around that too. So we're very lucky in that regard.
When you say you guys kind of wanted to always kind of strive to be better than each other, were you the types that would compare stats after games or after training sessions? Was that ever a thing?
No, not stats or anything. We just know. You know when you're better than someone. There's this time we had a game and they always do this to us, right? It's really annoying, actually. The coach would always put me on the opposite team to her. So obviously that's like when it gets real fiery. I don't know why, but it always brought out the most competitive side in me when I was playing against her. So we call them like internal games. We're practicing, but we've got to form two teams. So, and there's 2 days worth of games. And on the first day, my team won. And I batted really well, actually. And I was so determined to win. I like guided out. I got this like a score that I would never get. And I guided our team to the win and walked off. And I was really smug and got a trophy for it. Like, we had these trophies we made that just to make it, you know, a bit more fun.
Yeah.
And then the next day, she didn't say anything. This is Nat. Like, so I'm like red mist warrior. She's a cool, calm, patient assassin. Next day, no words, just all action. Unbelievable performance. Player of the match, won them the game on her own. And I was just like, ugh, for God's sake. It was what. Luckily, there were only two games, because that if there was a third, it could have been hectic. But it was fun. That was just like an example of tit for tat and bringing out the best in each other. So it was fun.
Coaching dream, I'd say.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I get like that. And then play basketball against Jude, and I have no clue how to play basketball, but I instantly want to be better than her. I'm just like, right, I don't care. Like, I just got to be better than you at this, because it's just level of competitiveness. Even if we go to the gym, it's like, I've got to shoulder press more than you. And I mean, her thing is bench press. She can bench press on a real amount. And I'm just like trying to get into the bar, trying to do a one rep max just so I can have one up on her. We used to do CrossFit together a little bit, and we sometimes had to be on a team with each other, because if we went against each other, we'd both just end ourselves, and we'd have training the next day, and for a week we wouldn't be able to even walk. Be able to push in my wheelchair. That's how like competitive it used to get. And so we just had to start working together and stop going against each other, because otherwise it would just get way too much. So yeah. I can definitely resonate with the feeling of being quite competitive, and some of us are a bit more silent and silent assassins, as like Nat sounds. So that's really funny.
Yeah.
You know, you've spoken a little bit about struggles with your mental health, struggles with coming back from injuries and stuff like that, and how you've battled with that. And do you think that it was those sort of injuries and the mental health that has sort of encouraged you to finish your career now and to sort of come away from it? Or would you say that you've learnt to be able to deal with that over time and learnt to be able to manage your mental health a bit more, and the injuries that come with playing cricket?
Yeah, I've had like waves with mental health, I guess, over my 20-year career. Like, it's not really something that I knew or identified at the time, because in the team in the last 2 years, it's like, are you okay? We have a full-time psychologist. I can turn on my phone, on Instagram, Twitter, and I could scroll once a day and see something related to it. So it is there if you need it. And even if you don't want to call someone or deal with something, you can read about it. So you can do it behind closed doors too. Whereas before, I didn't know what, you know, you didn't read about these things, you didn't see it. There was no psychological support. My parents don't talk. They don't. We don't have conversations about anything. Like, I can't go to my parents and be like, I'm feeling like this today. But that's just not a thing. So there was nothing. So it was all about self-learning and recognition on things like that. So I've had very much a journey and ups and downs in how I feel. And I've got that from failing and losing games or being really angry and trying to figure out why am I really angry. Sorry. So the people in my life I've chosen to surround myself with are very positive, very outgoing, very loving people. And I have always done that. I don't have many friends, but the friends that I do have are very special to me. And surrounding myself with those kind of people is really important. And I think I might have unconsciously done that because of my upbringing, either not trusting people or not wanting to be around negativity or people with not the same values as me. So that's been like my one really key ingredient is my brilliant siblings, really close, proper friends who would do anything for me. And then I guess, you know, going through all those challenges and battles that I've faced, especially the injuries, like my first back surgery really knocked me. Like, it's, yeah, as you know, being debilitated is a really shite thing. Like, you don't realise how lucky you are to be able to do the things that you can do as a human. And when I had, before I had my first back injury, like going from being an extremely active everyday kind of athlete to not being able to do anything was really tough, and it put me in a pretty dark place. Like, I thought I was gonna, you know, never play again, having had a taste of it for the first couple of years. And I wanted to try and get through that, but I had to get through that on my own. It did make me a better person, and that's when I started to create my life outside of cricket, because I was so scared that if it got taken away from me suddenly, like it did again, which it did, I needed something in place that I could fall back on. And for any athlete or anyone really, I would encourage that so much, because that gave me a bit of peace of mind and some security to fall back on. So, and I have that now. Now I've retired. That's why the decision was easy for me.
Is that your, when you're, are you referring to your property development business there?
Yeah. I started that a good 12 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like a lot of work. I mean, anyone who works in property development would say that it's all encompassing, and you were doing it at the same time as being an England cricketer and traveling around the world. So that seems pretty
it's
insane.
Extremely stressful. Yeah, I mean, you buy or sell one house, it's the most stressful thing you ever do, isn't it? And like you said, I was doing that whilst playing in a world event or whatever. It definitely encroached on my performance. Like, I'd say the last 5 years of my career were extremely difficult, and I don't think I played the best level that I could have, because I wasn't fully committed to either, but I knew I had to be committed to both somehow. But I wish I could have been 100% a cricketer. So had I been paid like a male athlete, I would have been able to just give absolutely everything to cricket. But instead, I had to give, you know, half of me to each to be able to have a future. And I don't regret that. It's sad, but I don't regret it. It was a necessity.
It's the reality, you know. I guess, for many. I mean, for the majority of female athletes, I mean, that's just the way it's got to be. You've got to kind of juggle doing things on the side to keep you going, sometimes to keep you going during your career, but also just to, like you say, think about what comes next. And for you, I mean, you've already touched upon kind of what an adjustment, I guess, it's been for you to retire from international cricket. You've still got the 100 this summer, but why did now feel like the right time? I mean, we're heading into a big summer, the Ashes, and how do you think it's going to be for you to be watching it from the other side, I guess?
I'm a terrible watcher. Like, I can't watch that back, because I just wanted to do well all the time, and I'm very critical of her performance. You know, really annoying parents that just tell you what you should have done, and you're like, shut up. You would not have done any better. In fact, you would have done worse. So I'm trying not to be like that, because it's so easy to criticised from your chair, and I've known that my whole life. But yeah, it all comes from a place of wanting her to be great. So I've now got to do it live and not rip everyone to shreds. And also not swear, which I find really hard.
I think people like pundits who really are honest, I guess. You can rip anyone to shreds if you want to.
Oh, I just got to do it in a kind way, I guess.
Yeah.
I think as well in like the women's game as well, I hear a lot about, you know, it's always constantly talking about positive, like record-breaking figures and like being like, oh, new record-breaking figures at such and such game. But then we fail to forget to actually talk about what's going on in the game. So I think it's so refreshing to have somebody that comes on as a pundit and actually talks about what's going on in the game, not talking about, oh, how amazing it is of like the women's game for it to be this many people in the stadium. No, I want to talk you to absolutely slate the people on the actual pitch that are doing their job, because as a sports fan watching that, I want to know what's going on, especially, you know, if you don't really know the game in and out, but you want honest reflection. And I think it'd be great to see commentary on women's sport become that little bit the same as what it is for men's sport. You wouldn't go into a men's game and go, how amazing it is to see all these people here in this stadium supporting the women's game, how incredible it is for them all to be role models. No, you'd be talking about how bad they are at their job. So I can't wait for you to sit there and to be
it is, it's on. Because with the women's game, I don't want to, this is not like a blanket comment, because it's a rare occasion, but some male pundits do say stuff like that because they don't have enough knowledge about the women's game, and so they find things to talk about that's actually quite patronising, like stop referring to it as something that's getting there, it's growing and all this. Like, we are here, we are on a major stage, we are on Sky Sports, we do have millions of followers, like, let's commentate on how good what you're seeing is, like, and how you're seeing it, how they do that, not like all the naff stuff like what you said. And I totally agree, but I only can control some of that. But I've always tried to tell them, like, I am just going to be myself and say the things that come naturally to me, because I feel like that's the best way. And if you don't like it, don't employ me.
I think you're going to do just fine. It's going to be fun. we'll all be tuning in.
I can say all my honest things in my book instead.
Is that coming up?
I've been threatening it. I've been talking about it. And mainly I was just joking about it, but I'm actually dead serious now. I think I'm... I mainly want to do it right, because I want to create a book of memories. Obviously my journey as a whole, all the ugly bits, and then when I have kids, I want to be able to tell them my story, because for some reason, I don't know if it's age, but I forget stuff all the time, and it's really annoying, because when I catch up with some old mates from, I don't know, the 2006 squad, they tell me stuff and it brings back so many happy memories, and I just wish I could remember them. I couldn't care if I only gave away one copy. It would be, you know, just great for that reason.
I think you'll do more than that, come on. I think a lot of people will want to hear about 19 years at the top of international cricket. It's pretty remarkable. I feel like we could talk for hours, but just to kind of wrap up, I wanted to finish with a question we ask all our guests. I mean, this podcast is about kind of championing different women in sport, athletes, broadcasters, leaders, coaches. And I just wonder if you could name anyone outside of your sport who you admire, who you admired while you were coming up in the sport, or who you admire now, that kind of stands out to you as a woman working in sport who has made a difference, I guess, to you.
Well, personally, when I'm asked this, like, there's not one person who's inspired me. Like, I take my inspiration from everywhere and everything. Like, my mom, to a certain degree, because of, like, there's obviously a reason she is the way she is, and I know that. I know that story. So that inspires me. All the people I've ever competed against or, you know, been on the same side as, they inspire me. From the TV that I saw, that I was able to see, because we only had a black and white telly, that inspired me. So Monica Sellers, Kelly Holmes, these people who are just seem so normal to me, not superstars, but that I could be one of them. And coming from an army background to suddenly winning something, but winning something so like naturally, and shocked herself doing it as if she'd done something that she didn't believe she could do. That inspired me. Obviously, Sella's being stabbed and coming back from something horrific, mentally and physically scar you. Like, these things stay with you. You don't see them at the time as this big inspirational moment, but they're there. So I take mine from everywhere to try and create the best version of myself. Like, there was my best friend who, when I came into the cricket team, she retired 2 years after, but I wanted to be better than her. Do you know what I mean? It's an array of everyone and everything, I guess. So, yeah.
I think I can speak on behalf of both of Molly and I when I say we've been super inspired by you. So thank you so much for coming on today, and thank you for sharing your story in such an open and honest way. I think it'll speak to so many people listening to this, and I'm sure they'll be able to relate to parts of it, and we can't wait to read the book, more importantly. So yeah, you'll have to up to date when it's coming out, and we'll let everybody know. So
yeah, get it
so
on
much,
your Christmas list.
Yeah, definitely. Right, that's it. There's been a date now, Christmas list. By Christmas this year, it'll be out there, be in your stockings. Thank you so much, Catherine.
No worries. Thanks for having me.